All Hit Radio.
Welcome to the X Zone, a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. Now, here's your host, Rob McConnell.
And welcome to the X Zone, everyone. I am Rob McConnell, and for the next 4 hours, I am your host, I am your guide, as together we cross the time-space continuum that, to this place that I call the X Zone. It's a place where people dare to believe and dare to be heard. It's a place where fact is fiction and fiction is reality. And the X Zone comes to you Monday through Friday from 10 p.m. Eastern until 2 a.m. Eastern, right here on the X Zone Broadcast Network, Mutual Broadcast Network, Talkstar Radio Network, and of course, on Simul Radio TV. If you'd like to send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com on all social media sites, Xzone Radio TV, and to find out about the programming we have available for you 24/7, 365 on the Xzone Broadcast Network, visit www.xzbn.net. And to watch the Xzone TV channel on Simul TV, visit their brand new website at www.simultv.com. All right, X-Zone, before I get to my first guest tonight, David Ditchfield, we're going to be just taking a look at the world today. The world is totally screwed up. The cops are the bad guys. The bad guys, well, they claim to be the good guys. They're tearing down statues. They're burning the flags. What's next? Are they going to be burning down museums? Are they going to be closing down and burning libraries? What is happening in this world today? Well, we can only guess, but watching the news, in my opinion, is the worst thing you can do. I think what we should do is shut our televisions off and just ignore all the news channels for 30 days. Let's see what happens to all these riots, these protests, the looters, if no one pays any attention to them. Do you think it'll stop? Do you think it'll make a difference? Well, I do. And I'd love to hear what you have to say about that. Send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com. As I said, my first guest tonight is David Ditchfield. And David is a near-death experience-inspired artist, composer, and author. He wants to use his NDE to make positive difference to people's lives. In 2006, he was dragged under a speeding train in a freak accident. Now, as the surgeons fought to save him, he had a profound NDE. When he woke up in hospital, he had acquired astonishing new abilities. Joining me now to talk to us more about these abilities and his newly developed talents is David Ditchfield. And David, welcome to the X-Zone.
Hi, Rob. Good to meet you.
Tell us about your accident, David.
Yeah, sure. Well, what happened was I'd been living in London at the time, and I'd gone to visit my sister and her family who live out in the country in Cambridge. And a friend had come up to visit me for a few days, and so we were just hanging out together, having a lovely time. She had to get back to London, so I took her to the rail station and helped her onto the train with her bags and what have you, and said goodbye and gave her a hug and a kiss. And at that point, we heard the emergency door alert go off, so I stepped back, and as I did... like the bottom section of my coat got caught in the closing doors.
Oh, heavens.
So, yeah. And I tugged as hard as I could, believe you me, but nothing happened. It wasn't going to get released. So I looked around for a guard on the platform, and there wasn't one. There was no guard whatsoever. So I called out, shouted for help, you know, just hoping that I might alert somebody in the station itself, but nobody turned up. And I heard the engine start to rev up, you know, ready to leave. So I was banging on the doors, you know, hoping that maybe a guard on the train itself would come running through. But that didn't happen either. So at this point, you know, I thought, okay, this is it, you know.
Yeah.
And the scientists started pulling out. And I remember looking into the eyes of my friend Anna, who I was seeing off, and just seeing the horror in her eyes, you know. Mm-hmm. And that made me just feel, well, I'm going to die. This is it. I'm not going to survive this.
Yeah.
So the train started edging its way along the platform at great speed, actually. You don't realize just how fast they pull out of stations until you're attached to the outside of a train. And I lost my footing, and I got dragged along the platform. And then next thing I knew, I was pulled between the space of the platform edge and the train itself. And then I got sucked under, and what was only described as being, you know, sucked down into the gates of hell, if you like. And it was just like being thrown into a machine, and into a complete tumble dryer, full speed washing machine, whatever, you know. And I was just tossed around all over the place, and was banging my head, and everything was.
Ooh.
It was a very, very violent sort of experience, and. And suddenly I found myself lying, you know, in between the tracks, if you like. And the train was still continuing to go at great speed. And I figured, well, it's not over yet. You know, I could get hit by some of the undercarriage.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I just thought of all the Bond movies I'd ever seen and, you know, mm-hmm. Indiana Jones. I thought at this stage they would keep their heads right down, you know. And so my nose was right into the oily gravel. And I guess that saved me. And because at that point, the train eventually moved on. It seemed like it was going on forever. It was quite a long train. And then off it went and disappeared off down the track and left me, you know, barely alive. but I was alive by a miracle.
And how old were you when this happened?
46.
My goodness. And how long do you... what distance do you think that you were dragged by this train?
I think it was about 20 meters or something like that.
My goodness.
I think it was. I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure it was around that. Yeah, it was quite a way. And it was a matter of seconds before I actually, mm-hmm. you know, went under, which is amazing because it felt more like minutes at the time.
It seemed like time stood still.
Yeah, it does. That's exactly what happened. It's interesting because I went into survival mode, basically.
Right.
And I basically had, even though the rail police, they did a massive inquiry on it, said to me that, you know, the whole thing took from the point of me being pulled off from stationary to going under, that was 13 and a half seconds. Now, that felt more like 13 and a half minutes because I had time in my mind to think it through. I remember seeing this news article a matter of weeks before where a young child had been thrown from a burning apartment block and had survived without any broken limbs. And they said the reason being is because young infants are so they don't tense up, you know. And so I thought that's my only chance is to relax. So I had time in my mind to actually think all this through and process mm-hmm. it and do it, you know. And so that's exactly what I did. I let myself go with it, if you like. So, yeah.
Now, obviously, you were taken from the tracks, brought to the hospital, and you must have had major injuries.
I did do it, so yeah. I mean, it could have been a heck of a lot worse. you know, the rail police, when mm-hmm. they finished off all their inquiries, they actually sort of said they shook their heads. It took a year to do the whole thing. And they said, look, we don't get it. You should be dead. All our calculations, mm-hmm. you should not have survived that. We don't understand it. So I said, you know. I mean, I was knocked about really bad. I mean, the main thing that happened was my left arm was severed.
Oh, my God.
From the elbow down. Yeah, so that was pretty horrific, and it meant that I lost a lot of blood. It was one of the first things I noticed, you know, because I'd been wearing this really good quality coat that day that I couldn't get free mm-hmm. from those doors, and that was completely shredded right open, you know, and as was my arm.
Now, we have to take a commercial break in a minute or so, but I want to talk to you when we come back from the break about your near-death experience and why I'm carrying it over until the next segment is. I don't want to interrupt you. You've got a fascinating story. And thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and sharing it with us. X-Zone Nation, our guest is David Ditchfield, and his website is www.shineonthestory.com. That's www.shineonthestory.com. And for those of you who just may be joining us here on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, David Ditchfield is our guest. He is a near-death experience-inspired artist, composer, and author. Now, he wants to use his near-death experience to make a positive difference into people's lives. We've been discussing in this first segment the accident in 2006 when he was dragged under a speeding train in a freak accident. When we come back, this fascinating story continues. This is the X Zone. I am Rob McConnell. We're coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada, on the shores of Lake Erie. And David and I will be back on the other side of this break. And if you'd like to send us an email, don't forget the email address is xzone@xzoneradiotv.com. On all social media sites, X-Zone Radio TV. And for all the broadcast schedule of the X-Zone Broadcast Network and our fascinating group of hosts, including Kevin Randall, Gwilda Wiecka, Justina and Peter Marsh, just to name a few, visit us at www.xzbn.net. We'll be back on the other side of this commercial break. Don't go away.
Everyone told me to be strong, and don't shed a tear. Through the darkness and good times, I knew I'd make it through. And the world thought I had it all, but I was waiting for you.
Welcome back, everyone. David Ditchfield is my special guest this hour, www.shineonthestory.com. Now, before the commercial break, David was telling us about the accident that he had as he was dragged under a speeding train in a freak accident going back to 2006. David, we were just getting you from the tracks to the hospital, multiple injuries, the part of your arm had been severed. Please continue, sir.
Yeah, sure. Well, anyway, we raced down the highway in an ambulance at full speed to the hospital, and I remember arriving there and seeing like this, it was like this semicircle of like a team waiting for me of medics and nurses and doctors and surgeons, and so in I went, and they were frantically running around, you know, trying to save me at that point. And so I was laid there, and my family had arrived as well, so there was an awful lot going on at that point, and I was in an awful lot of pain, and the lights was really intense, you know, because just being in that hospital, it was very bright, just lying on my back. And then I suddenly went from all that agony and all that pain and intense light to what seemed like a darkened room, but like a really beautiful, relaxing, darkened space, if you like. And I suddenly thought, where am I? You know, and I looked around me, and suddenly I saw all these, like, there were like these pulsating colors or pulsating all around me. They were like sort of like ambers and greens and reds and yellows, just slowly pulsating. And that, I found that so relaxing. And I looked around, and I looked, and I was no longer lay on the hospital trolley that I was lying in the hospital on. I was now lay on like this huge slate rock. It was almost like a big medieval altar. And I thought, wow, you know, this is amazing. And I figured at that point, this is it. I've passed over, that I died. And so I lay back onto this slate rock, and it felt really comfortable. You wouldn't think that lying on a slate rock would be, but it was. And I was totally at peace with where I was. I got no sense of fear or you know, regret or, my goodness, I've died. It was just, I just went with it because it just felt so beautiful. And I suddenly felt the presence of somebody or something else nearby. And so I lifted my head again, and I looked, and just at my feet, I could see this, like a being of light, if you like. It was like this person stood there wearing just like a contemporary sort of black T-shirt with this beautiful white blonde hair and this calming expression. And this person was like neither male or female, you know, androgynous, and just staring at me with this knowing smile, as if I felt like I'd known this person for the whole of my life and beyond. And I felt very protected. So as this person just smiled at me and gazed at me, I just laid my head back and relaxed. And then suddenly there were like three grids of white light coming in towards me. And as I looked into these three grids, I felt this sense of calm. It was like a beautiful light, a pure white light. And I felt like that light was healing me. I could, and I couldn't take my gaze away, even though it was so bright. I mean, you know, electric light or sunlight that bright, you couldn't look into. But with this, you could. And you know, it was great. Just the sensation of this light. And then I suddenly looked up again and realized there were two other female forms either side of me, and they got their hands stretched out over my body. And they were like, sort of, they were healing me with their hands, almost like a form of like a Reiki healing, if you like. And I could feel this sensation of, you know, love that was coming from them, and it was just transmitting through their fingertips and into my body. And I could, it was almost like every molecule on my body was vibrating with this sensation of love. And I looked at them, and one of them, the one was the like sort of dark brown hair, sort of European sort of look about her, and the other girl was more sort of like either Asian Indian or American Indian sort of look about her. And again, I felt this kind of like I knew them, you know, and I felt safe in their hands, and it's like I felt like they were healing me and getting me prepared for something which I didn't know what, but it was a beautiful feeling. And at that point, I looked. I thought I'd better check my body and see how it's all looking. And everything was intact. My arm was fixed. There was not even a bruise or a scratch, you know. And I could just see every part of my body, which was covered in this beautiful blue sort of satin or sheet, like a cloth, which is a very cool, calming sort of effect. And I just lay back and, you know, enjoyed the healing that I was getting. And I suddenly thought about my family. I thought, well, I knew that they were down in the emergency department in the hospital. I knew that they were really distressed when I'd been brought in, as it was. So I thought, they're going to be really beside themselves now, because clearly I'm dead. And I'd passed on. So I thought, if I look over my left hand shoulder over the side of this big rock, right, I would probably see them. So I looked over my left hand side, and I didn't actually see them at all. I couldn't. But what I did see was this most beautiful and remarkable sight, and it was like a huge waterfall, like a huge arc of stars that was just cascading down, and there was more like shooting stars falling down through the middle. And when I looked down, it looked like all these stars were cascading down into other galaxies, you know, and into infinity. And as I looked further down, there were like beautiful colors, like again more like reds and oranges and greens, and it was just a remarkable sight. So this was like the sensation of all this was just like overwhelming. It was just so beautiful. And I turned over and I suddenly thought, right, all this sensation of love and the healing that I was getting from everything at that point suddenly turned up. The dial had turned up like tenfold. And I realized that there was A huge tunnel of white light was drawing in towards me. Now, as I looked into this tunnel of white light, I could see that it was like surrounded by all these flames of oranges and yellows that were like slowly circulating around this tunnel of white light. And the energy that was coming off that was remarkable. And
sounds like it.
And I just knew. Yeah, it was. It was just basically, I understood at that point, because a lot of what was coming to me was a lot of knowledge and telepathy was happening throughout. And I just thought, right, this is the source of all creation. This is God. This is where it all comes from. And it's not, you know, the image that we all know and think mm-hmm. of as God, you know, like on the Sistine Chapel in Rome. And it's not a male form. It's actually a white tunnel of light surrounded by these dramatic flames. And it was just, wow. I just thought, that's it. I've just discovered I'm looking at God now.
When was it that you decided to return, and how did you return back to your body?
Well, basically, it wasn't that I made a conscious decision myself. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was me who decided. I think whoever it was, they made a decision to send me back pretty much at that point. I remember lying back, and then I thought, and suddenly, as I lay there, I was smiling and laughing and with that knowledge of what I'd seen, that I discovered God, that they sent me back, and I was suddenly crashing back down into my body, and I'd gone from this beautiful place right into the hospital and straight back into the pain threshold and the bright lights and overkill. Yeah.
Now, during your near-death experience, did you look down from the atop and see yourself on the operating table? Did you see the surgeons working on you?
No, I didn't do. No. I know, obviously, now, because I've looked into near-death experiences, that mm-hmm. some people do actually have that experience, you know, but that wasn't the case with me.
And the only type of deity that you actually saw that you could relate to being God, was this white light. Am I correct?
Yeah. So that's it. That's to me, that is that's where it all comes from. That's the source of all creation, as I say. So,
All right, listen, we've got to take another break here. So when we come back, we'll continue the story and talk about the amazing things that you were able to accomplish after this train accident in 2006, your accident, your recovery, and we'll talk about your musical instinct, your musical composing, your high-quality paintings, and much more. Exonation, our guest this hour is David Ditchfield. His website is www.shineonthestory.com. And David and I will be back on the other side of this break with the news as we continue here in the X-Zone from our broadcast center and studios in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada. Don't forget, you can join me Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. until 9 a.m. on www.cbrtv.com. That's a Crystal Beach radio station and TV station right here in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada, as I welcome each and every morning with all of you. My name's Rob McConnell. Don't go away.
Ooh. He said he's going.
He said he's going back to find.
Going back.
World he left behind not so long ago. He's leaving.
Welcome back, everyone. This is The X-Zone. I am Rob McConnell, coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to send me an email, xzone@xzoneradiotv.com, on all social media sites, xzoneradiotv, and for the broadcast schedule and all the other great shows that we have available for you 24/7, 365 on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, visit www.xzbn.net. David Ditchfield is my special guest, and his website is shineonthestory.com. Now, David, prior to your near-death experience and the encounter that you had with those on the other side, as well as the recognition of the beam of light or the tunnel of light or the white light as you saw it, were you interested in any part of spirituality, New Age phenomenon, or any of the spiritual work that is going on in the world today?
No, not at all. It's interesting because when I had the near-death experience, mm-hmm. when I came back, I actually figured that I was the only person that it had happened to. You know, I thought, because I'd never heard of near-death experiences. I'd had one slight brush with spirituality, and this was interesting actually, because it was a couple of months before I'd been traveling up to see my sister once more with the family, and I was on the train and I sat opposite an elderly couple, mm-hmm. and a lady there offered me a flyer saying, you know, look, we're off to see a brilliant medium tonight. Why don't you come along? And I was going, yes, okay, thanks. I don't know why she started chatting, but she did. And when I arrived at my sister's, I remember there was a lot of chaos there with sorting out the kids and stuff, the boys.
Sure.
So I said, I'm just going to go and take a drink. So I went off, and then I decided to go and see this medium. And it was just curiosity. I just thought, let's go and see what it's about. And she picked me out amongst, you know, the whole crowd of people who were sat in the spiritualist church. And she said, the man in the blue sweater over there, your life's about to change. And I was going, oh, right. I said, in what way? And she said, and she stopped and she turned around and said, they're not telling me, but they're just saying it's going to be big and be ready for it. And at that stage, I figured, oh, I'm going to win the lottery, you know. I'm
sure, that'd be cool.
The relationship, yeah. I'm after the big car and all that stuff, you know. But obviously, I knew looking back that was a message. It was like a precursor as to that big change that was about to happen. So, yeah.
So how has your belief in religious philosophy changed since your near-death experience?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's just, it's, you know, I think about my guides, and the guides, I call them my guides, that were there with me, healing me that day. I feel that their presence is with me on a day-to-day basis, and they work with me. And I also feel that we've all got those guides. We don't have to have a dramatic accident and go under a train and have a near-death experience to discover them. Because I found that those guides have been with me throughout my whole life, and I just hadn't realized it. So, my whole belief and faith and in God as well has changed, yeah.
Now, I understand that you now compose classical music and you're also an accomplished artist. Prior to this near-death experience, did you have any of these skills, any of these talents?
No, not at all. I mean, I played guitar very basically, you know,
right.
Sort of three chord wonder songs, you know, mm-hmm. in punk sort of pop bands and stuff. But no, I was definitely not classically trained, you know, to write music. And in terms of paintings, you know, that came about basically, you know, just because when I came around from the anesthetic, I was just so scared that I was going to forget everything, and I just thought, I've got to paint this, mm-hmm. and I got this idea I was going to do it, but it was going to be a huge painting. I thought it's got to be like a huge canvas, like a Michelangelo,
right?
And so because it's a big story, so the painting came first. I mean, and in fact, when I came out of hospital, you know, I talked about doing it, and my mum's sister, my auntie, had just come over. Well, she came over from Canada actually, so she popped over to visit the family, and she bought me a canvas, and so that was it. So I got started on this painting, and I knew that I was, once I started it, uh-huh. that I was being helped. So yeah.
Now you said you played in pop bands, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The information you sent us, it says that you played guitar in punk guitar bands.
Yeah, that's right. There's punk pop, you know, okay. That's what I mean, that kind of genre. Yeah, nothing serious. I mean, I was just trying, like everyone, trying to make a break.
Now, prior to your near-death experience, what was your profession?
I'd left school without any qualifications, basically. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, trying to pick up whatever work I could, and
right.
you know, most of it was manual labour work. So that was pretty much what I was doing. So which I wasn't very good at, actually. I just found that I was struggling to get by with that. I look around at the other guys and I think, wow, they're really skilled. You know, they can they can plaster a ceiling and a wall, and I don't even know where to start. You know,
I understand that you also have severe dyslexia.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, that's why I left school and struggled to get work, because I wasn't diagnosed with it when I was at school, and so I was just basically treated as being lazy and not trying hard enough. That wasn't the case. I wanted to succeed. Yeah, I wanted to sort of fit in into the society and stuff. But you know, it was a struggle. So my life before was very much me just kind of I hit rock bottom basically. Eventually, mm-hmm. you know, London's very liable. It's very hard to survive in financially, and you know, so I was broke, and it was just life was very tough at that point. Yeah.
How do you explain your ability now to, you know, your new composer skills? You've apparently your debut as NDE inspired symphony with the Divine mm-hmm. Light, you know, was apparently a completely sold out. And how many people were at the sellout event? How large was the audience?
I think it was about the 300
wow.
and 50, I think the capacity was, yeah. So, which was great because, you know, they weren't used to selling out. It sold out 2 weeks in advance. You know, the energy that was coming, that was the surrounding, all that was fantastic. They asked me basically to talk to the local press about my piece. I said, mm-hmm. yeah, sure. And then the local press loved the story because it was based on my near-death experience itself. Right. And they knew about the accidents because it was all over the local news at the time. So it went from there to the BBC coming along and wanted to film the rehearsal. So that's why it sold out, you know. But the energy was fantastic, you know. I mean, it was remarkable because, I got no classical training whatsoever. And I still can't read or write a single note of notation. Mm-hmm. But I just sat down because I sat down with this old cheap synthesizer one day and started trying to put something together. I was trying to write a pop song, basically, and that wasn't coming. And then suddenly these chords came through, and I thought, that sounds nice. And I started building on it. I thought, this sounds more like it should be played like for an orchestra. And I'd become friends with a cello player in the local orchestra at that stage, who'd seen my paintings and she really liked my work. And we got chatting over coffee one day, and she said, "What are you up to?" And I told her about this piece, and she laughed. I said, "Oh, maybe we could perform it one day." And I thought, you know, that would be great. And the amazing thing is, I got this complete sense of like settled belief in myself and ambition that. Not ambition, that's the wrong word, you know, but I just kind of believed that I could do it. Just like I knew that I could do these paintings, I thought, why not write this for orchestra? Let's do this and follow it through. So I did. And my brother you were going to say something.
Yeah, when you say you wrote it for orchestra, if you couldn't compose, how could you write it?
Yeah, well, that's what, I was about to say, actually. Yeah, my brother said, look, I've got this package that you can use on your computer, and when you play the notes on your keyboard, mm-hmm. it will transform it into notation. So that's how that happened. That's how that came about. And then I got that all sort of printed off and then just got all the individual parts. I mean, there's more to composing a symphony than just that. I mean, that's what's amazing. I mean, I spoke to like the conductor and I said, I'm sure you've written loads yourself. And he said, no. So I wouldn't even attempt to write a symphony for orchestra because it's just so involved. He said, believe how you pulled this off. You know, I started hearing instruments that were coming through that I didn't even know existed, you know, and you know, like cor anglaise, and which is like a sort of reed instrument. And then I just started putting all those sounds together in my head and then found out, did some research into what was what. And then I suddenly got the symphony.
All right, stand by, my friend. You and I have to take our final break for this hour. And Exonation, if you'd like to get more information about our guest and his exciting story, visit his website, www.shineonthestory.com. www.shineonthestory.com. That's www.shineonthestory.com. This is the X-Zone. I am Rob McConnell, coming to you from our broadcast center and studios in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada. Once again, if you'd like to find out about all the great programming we have available for you 24/7, 365 on the X-Zone Broadcast Network, visit www.xzbn.net. And if you'd like to join me here locally, we're on the AM and FM radio band. And if you'd like to listen to us from wherever you are around the world on the Crystal Beach Radio TV Network, visit us at www.cbrtv.net. I'm Rob McConnell. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is the X-Zone. I am Rob McConnell. If you'd like to send me an email, X-Zone at xzoneradiotv.com. Our website, xzbn.net, to find out when and where you can listen to all the great shows that we have for you 24/7, 365. My guest this hour is David Ditchfield. His website is www.shineonthestory.com. David, you're a composer, you're a painter. You're a very lucky person to still be with us on this side of the veil. How has your experience on the other side changed you?
Right. Well, the way I'd say it's changed me is that my life is a lot more three-dimensional now. You know, I've got a massive appreciation of the world around me, firstly. But the number one thing is that I've learnt self-love, because that's what I was given when I was in my near-death experience, and I hadn't got that before, so I got no self-worth either, so I didn't believe in myself. Whereas now, you know, I've got that sort of sense of self-belief and to drive me forward. Yeah.
In order to have others love you, you yourself must love yourself first.
Oh, totally, yeah. And also to sort of find that self-belief to be able to, you know, push yourself forward in life. And you've got to have that self-love. And I feel that we've all got really wonderful souls that are buried underneath years of time, whatever we've been through in our lives. In mind, you know, it was oppression and guilt and feeling like a failure, and which was totally wrong, you know. We've all got it within us, and we've all got our guides that we can call upon to help us find that, you know, to find that voice.
I understand that the foreword to your book Shine On was written by somebody that we've had on our show several times, Dr. Raymond Moody. How did Raymond get a hold of your book?
Right, well, straight after I'd done my first painting, I remember going onto the internet trying to find out more about what had happened to me, and obviously I started realizing about near-death experiences, and I found his name. So I sent an email just with the painting, and he actually got back to me a couple of days later and spoke to me and said how powerful it was. And then that was that, and I thought nothing of it. And then as time went on, I realized just how big he was. In fact, he coined the phrase near-death experience, as you probably know.
Yeah.
When I wrote my book, I thought, well, I'd love to get in touch with him again, see if he would like to read it. And so I just randomly sent an email again, and I didn't hear back this time for months. And then his manager got in touch with me and said, look, you know, I've just seen your website. I've just seen the trailer on your website and your story. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. She said, Raymond's going to love this. Leave it with me. So she passed it on to him. And he read the book. And then she got back and said, yeah, Raymond loves it. And he said that he would write an endorsement. And I was like, oh, that'd be brilliant, you know. And then later that day, she got back again saying, look, he's actually said he'll write the foreword. So that was just pretty amazing. So that was before it had even been published that he'd come back. And so, yeah, he's an amazing person and a really lovely soul as well. So I owe an awful lot to him. So, yeah, that was brilliant.
Tell me, David, are you afraid of death?
No, not at all. No, I can say that. It doesn't frighten me at all because I've seen what awaits us all. And and it's a really beautiful thing. And also, it's like I realize that there's no way that the soul just kind of just switches off like a light switch. Yeah, I think our bodies do, you know, once we die. But we definitely go on. We definitely go on, and our souls continue to the next part of the journey.
What do you think our purpose in this lifetime is?
Well, I would say to really try and embrace it as much as you can, because as I say, the one thing I realized is you know, we're living in this is heaven on earth, basically. Mm-hmm. So we're surrounded by so much beauty and color and amazement, and we don't realize it. So I would say for everyone, try and enjoy this part of the journey, because it's a really special part. Yeah.
Do you think that there is life after death?
Yeah, most certainly. There's definitely life after death.
Reincarnation.
Because I experienced it, and I know that others have as well, and they have exactly the same feeling as me. You know, I've spoken to one or two other people who have actually interviewed me who've had near-death experiences.
No, I'm not themselves. I'm not talking about near-death experiences here. I'm talking about life after death.
Oh, what do you mean? When it's
your final curtain on this realm, this plane, is there a life that continues somewhere else, or even many believe in reincarnation?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do believe in reincarnation, but I also believe that some souls are meant to stay with us. Yeah. You know, it's I lost my mother last summer, and
I'm sorry,
and it's interesting. Oh, thank you. That was really hard because there was a big part of me knew where she was going, and I knew that she was going on to a really beautiful place as she passed. But obviously, I had to deal with the loss of my mother, who brought me up and brought me into the world. But I feel that her presence is with me a lot, especially at the moment when it's a very intense and important time for me to promote my book and stuff. And I'm very sure that she's around me. So I do believe that some of our loved ones do continue to sort of be there on the other realm to watch over us. Not all of them, just some of them. Yeah.
When you go out and you do your speaking engagements and you do the promotion of your books and you get to meet people one-on-one, what are some of the questions that they ask you?
The one you've just asked me there, actually, you know, if I fear death, because an awful lot of people do fear death, and they're asking for me to give, you know, some form of affirmation, if you like, that we do go on to the next realm. But also people are really interested to know what transition I've gone through and how do I sort of communicate with my guides, which I talk about a lot. You know, that I just say that I pray to them and I just ask directly for what I want, you know, even if it's the smallest thing. Mm-hmm. If I'm concerned about something really small, I will ask them and they will give me that help.
So have you become a medium as well after your accident, where you can actually communicate with the other side?
No, I'm not actually a medium. I wouldn't say that. I just say that all of us can connect with our guides. You know, we shouldn't be... We shouldn't feel that we've got to go to church to pray. We can just, you know, we can just simply just turn around and ask, you know, humbly, but we can turn around and say, look, please, can you help me? I need your help right now. Rather than, you know, a lot of faiths, we go through a lot of feeling like we're not worthy, or, you know, kind of like there's a sense of coming from a point of view that we're sinners almost. Forgive us for our sins, but I don't think we should be asking for forgiveness for our sins. We should be asking for help, you know.
All right. How did your wife and children take your accident and your progression into being a composer, musician, and artist?
Right. Well, I'm not actually married, but my family all around me, I don't know. It's almost like they knew right from the off that something had changed in my life, and so they completely went with it. They just knew that everything that happened was all part of my journey. And, you know, my mother, I remember, and my father, when they came into hospital, it took me a week to tell them about what had happened. You know, with it, because I didn't want them. I wanted them to believe it. You know, and when I started telling them about the near death experience, I remember my mother turning around saying, "Well, yes, we know." And I said, "How do you know?" And it was like a mother's instinct, you know. Yeah. She said, "Well, every time we come in, you can hardly move. You've got tubes coming out of you and everything, but you're glowing. You've got this glow about you, it's like you're helping everybody around you and giving strength to them." So from that point onwards, you know, all my family around me knew that something had shifted big time, and they knew that before my life was awful, and they were all concerned about me. You know, I was drinking heavily, and you know, just basically not. I was just trying to fix things in all the wrong way. Whereas now I don't. You know, now I fix things in by going within into my higher state of consciousness, if you like. So yes, but they know that, and so they believe in it, you know. Right. It's like the book's coming out, and they, you know, I'm sure dyslexic, but I've still written a book, but you know, they're excited about it, and they believe that would happen as well,
because, David. David, our time is up. I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight here on the X-Zone. And X-Zone Nation, if you'd like to find out more about our guest this hour, David Dishfield, visit his website at www.shineonthestory.com. That's www.shineonthestory.com. I'll be back on the other side of this commercial break at 6.5 minutes past the top of the hour as we continue here in the X-Zone with yours truly, Rob McConnell, from our broadcast center and studios in Crystal Beach, Ontario, Canada. If you'd like to find out more about the X-Zone Broadcast Network, visit us at www.xzbn.net. And for the X-Zone TV channel, www.simultv.com, or visit us at www.xzonetvchannel.com. For more information on our guest this hour, David Dishfield, visit www.shineonthestory.com. That's www.shineonthestory.com. I'll be back on the other side of the news. Whatever you do, do not go away.